Welcome. Let's see what's happening here in the heavens. We talked last week about Venus going into Pisces, pardon me, and its sign of exaltation, and that is going to happen on April 1st. And Venus will be in Pisces until April 25th. It's about 25 days. So it should be a highly, highly creative time. Got something you want to do in terms of art and artistry and creativity or music or painting. Or when is your show?
25th of April.
There you go.
Perfect.
Under the wire.
She's something to show you later.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Good old chanted Krishna like.
Oh.
Just
really? In your painting?
Yeah.
Miss Catherine has been chanting the Maha Mantra, and she is painting and preparing for a big show. She's having of her work in Dunleary. Soon. Mm-hmm. April 25th. Wait till April 1st when Venus goes into Pisces. I wonder how you'll ramp it up a few notches from that time forward. The mantra certainly won't hurt you in that regard. If you get in touch with the source, the very source, that's like being a lamp and plugging into the wall. That's what it's like. We've mentioned this, you probably know this, but the soul cannot be away from spirit, pure spirit, for very long. Pure spirit in Sanskrit is called Brahman. So we sleep, and you think it's to rest your body, and to some extent it is, but the deep sleep state is when the soul is being plugged back into Brahman. That's what deep sleep is. That's also why, and that we have to do pretty much nightly, you know, in a 24-hour period. Sometimes you can go without sleep. Sometimes you can take drugs and go without sleep for long periods of time. People do that. But we need sleep. And that's the purpose of deep sleep. You have heard of yogis or people who practice meditation need less sleep. Because when you meditate, you are also plugging into spirit, Brahman. And if you can plug into spirit in meditation, in mantra, different kinds of meditations, no one kind of meditation. Different kinds, different ways. It's really just simply connecting with God. And you can't not do it. So if you don't do it, you know, it's if a person says, yeah, I don't believe in all that baloney. Okay, then just sleep. And you'll plug in that way. When you contact spirit or Brahman in the waking state through meditation, you must be in the very least, in the mode of goodness, sattva guna. Symptoms of the mode of goodness, anybody remember any symptoms? Beauty. Love, truth, peace, happiness, joy, contentment, desirelessness, gentleness, kindness, compassion. All that's not a goodness. Knowledge, learning, teaching, not a goodness. So when you plug in, when you contact spirit, you must be at least, at the very least, in the mode of goodness. You will not do it in the mode of passion. You will not do it in the mode of ignorance. Ideally, you transcend the 3 modes, and that becomes a transcendental experience, which is what meditation is supposed to be, to take you beyond the material experience, material reality, the mundane, routine, day-to-day existence. So if you refuse or don't want to or are not interested in contacting Brahman or spirit, taking time to do that in the mode of goodness or in transcendence, then you can do it in the mode of ignorance. Sleep. Sleep is the mode of ignorance. Because you're unaware. You're gone. You've checked out. You can't really control too much of anything unless you practice, then you can direct your astral body here and there. But the need to connect with spirit is a daily requirement. So we think we're far from God, but we're not. We're not. We couldn't exist. Air, water, and food is not enough. It's not enough. This world is so far removed. Alright. Mercury enters Pisces on March 30th. And Mercury remains in Pisces until April 15th. Well, that's not very long, is it? 2 weeks. What do you know about Mercury in Pisces? What is unique? What is distinctive about Mercury being in Pisces? Anybody know? Mercury is debilitated in Pisces. That is his weakest spot. Venus is exalted in Pisces. Planets can be exalted in only one sign out of 12. So you get if you have an exalted planet in your birth chart, you have a 1 in 12 shot of having an exalted planet. So it's a 12 to 1 possibility. Dervla has 3 exalted planets. So she's, the odds are working in her favor.
How do you know if they're exalted or not? I have 3 in Aquarius.
I would have told you early on, immediately at the beginning. I would have told you because it's important.
So, if your Mercury is depleted as well as Mercury normally being depleted,
yeah. Well, this is what I'm explaining. So, each planet is exalted in one sign out of 12. Different planet, different sign, right? So, if Venus is exalted in Pisces, it's debilitated exactly opposite. 180 degrees. Exactly opposite. So, if you go from Pisces, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, that's exactly opposite. Okay? So Venus is debilitated in Virgo, exalted in Pisces. Mercury happens to be debilitated in Pisces and would be exalted in Virgo. Exactly opposite, right? Sun is exalted in Aries and debilitated in Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra. Aries and Libra, directly opposite. That's how it works. So when Mercury is debilitated, communications are not great. You know the old retrograde Mercury? Well, Mercury debilitated is more or less same type of thing. But it's very, very good because it's in Pisces for circumspection, meditation, thoughtfulness, contemplation. If you want to solve a misunderstanding and a conflict that you have with somebody and a communication problem that you're having, not the best time to do it with Mercury debilitated. But as I've told you, planets, Mercury, Sun, Venus, Mars, usually remain in a sign for a month. This is 2 weeks. This is, hi, gotta go. You know, it's real short. So Venus and Mercury will be together. And Sun and Moon, which is like on the 4th, 5th, 3rd, 4th, 5th of April. It's a very powerful conjunction of Sun, Moon, be new moon, Mercury and Venus. Powerful day.
When's the 4th of April?
Yeah, it's like 3rd, 4th, 5th, somewhere in there. 5th, 6th maybe it is.
And that's not every year, it's just this year?
Oh yeah, just it keeps changing. It's always changing. It's not every year. No. All right. I didn't know what to talk about, actually. And then I was looking for this thing, and then I wanted to... I made some notes, and then, oh, I'll talk about that, and then I couldn't find the notes. So... Yeah, I think I will anyway. This painting here on the wall is of... the male and female principle in embrace. Well, it's kind of an embrace. It is an embrace. And she's wrapped around him, sort of. He's wrapped around her. They're wrapped around each other. This is creation. That's what that painting represents. Creation. In Chinese, you'd say yin and yang, or yin and yang, if you like. In the Vedic understanding, we say Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti is feminine. Prakriti is nature, like Mother Nature. They call it Mother Nature. Translation, Prakriti, feminine. And it's material energy. It's specifically connected to this creation, the physical world of the universes. And Prakriti is entered into by Purusha or penetrated by Purusha, but in every sense of the word. And Purusha is male, spirit, masculine, God, person. A Purusha is a person also. So, What's this? People wear them around their necks. Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti. This is horizontal, the horizon, indicating earth, where, and it is spirit descends into it. And now you have creation. Because you could have all of the elements without spirit. It doesn't come alive. Spirit is essential. We heard of Alanya's brother passing at a very untimely age, so we will take some time to think about him a little bit later. What is the difference? A body lies there, a dead body. It's got a heart. It's got a liver. It's got legs. Same face. Face you've always known. Same clothes. Favorite ring. They're all there. But you won't have anything to do with that body much longer. Why? No spirit. Spirit's gone. So spirit is the animator. Purusha is the animator. Prakriti is what is animated. Some people may take offense. I don't mean any offense by this, but according to Vedic understanding, Purusha is the enjoyer and Prakriti is the enjoyed. So spirit plays or cavorts or has pastimes in matter, in the material realm, by taking a body, right? And enjoys the body and enjoys through the body, right? Kalindi's not listening to me anymore now. She's doing her vrata. She's doing her rounds. It's easy. So, man, what sounds, well, this is what I was apologizing for. Male enjoys the female. Female enjoys the male, but who's really the enjoyer? Who gets penetrated? The female. And that, by definition, is that the female is Prakriti and the male is Purusha. Not saying women don't enjoy, in fact, women enjoy more. We've established that in previous evenings. Won't go back into that now. Now, on the biggest, on the much larger scale, God is the enjoyer. And all this Prakriti, all this nature or creation is his to enjoy. So we are all living entities. If you look at living entities in relation to God, are we all co-enjoyers or are we the enjoyed?
Co-enjoyers.
And that's why you have that body, my friend. No, we're not co-enjoyers. We try to be co-enjoyers. We try real hard. We are the enjoyed. God in his original state, original form, gets up one day and he says, we talked about this last time a little bit. You know, I really want to find out how diverse and wonderful I am. I want to see all the various things that can be seen and experienced due to my unlimited nature. So, with that in mind, I will expand myself into millions and millions and millions of forms, of souls who will take births in different kinds of bodies. God's the enjoyer. We are the enjoyed.
He's going to laugh watching us.
Oh, I'm sure he's thoroughly entertained. So the reason we're here is because we said, well, wait a second, you know, why you, welcome, you're the enjoyer. We talked about this recently. Why should you be the enjoyer? I want to be the enjoyer. You know, I'm tired of this program. Fine, come down here. Terra firma, and you can enjoy to your heart's content. But you can't enjoy where God lives. It's like you go to somebody's house and you're a guest in their house and you're staying there for a few days and you take over. Right? You take over completely, saying, okay, now I'm going to move the furniture because I don't like the way you've got it organized here. I prefer the bedroom you're in. You can sleep. Well, why don't you sleep on the couch? Because I want to give that bedroom to... Yeah, and off we go. So what's God going to say? He's going to say, well, no, that won't work. Tell you what, let me give you a little house on Deacon's Lane down in Enniskerry and in Ireland. And knock yourself out. Enjoy yourself. So that's what we're doing here. Because we're trying to rearrange his house and he didn't go for it. So here we are. We get our own little house or apartment or pitch tent or whatever you like. So we are the enjoyed. There's a line in the Bhagavad Gita that says, kartaham iti manyate. Karta aham iti manyate. And it means, thus he thinks, I am the doer. And it's speaking about we living beings. Jivas. Karta is doer, aham is I, iti is thus, and manyate is thinks. Thus he thinks, I am the doer. That is the definition of ego. Ego. So ego means to think that you're the enjoyer, that you're in charge, you're the doer, you're making the decisions. The only way you could legitimately be the doer, be in charge, and make decisions is if you were not under the influence of the three modes of nature. If you are able to transcend rajas, tamas, and sattva, passion, ignorance, and goodness, and you come to the transcendental state, maybe then you would be able to make an actual unconditioned decision, a real decision that isn't a decision that in which you're being led around by the nose or by the tongue, by the genital, by the whatever you're being led around by, some desire, some sensory organ. And if you actually got to that state of transcendence, the ego kind of dissolves at that point. And your desire to be the doer, the controller, the organizer, the originator kind of comes to an end. Then you surrender to divine will, because you realize that your greatest happiness lies in serving God, in serving God's will, because you're part and parcel of the whole. If you are a branch on a tree and somebody comes around with the water to water the tree, and you say, "Oh no, 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 don't water down at the base. Just water me. I'll take the water directly. Thanks very much." The tree will die. That's what we try to do down here. We try to be a branch and get it direct without realizing that the greater good and our own good as well is service to God or the whole. So that's kind of the story of Prakriti and Purusha. And that's what this painting depicts, that harmony of male and female in Prakriti and Purusha, in spirit and matter. Seeing how somebody recently passed on, there's a section here, I just opened it and there it was, on death. The feet of, I'm just kind of reading, I don't know what's going to be good and what isn't. The feet of a deceased person should be kept on the ground with the toes pointing upward. The burning of a dead body is a kind of atonement. Atonement is to pay the debt of sin or negative karmic behavior. Cremation is a kind of atonement for the sins the person committed throughout the life. I don't think it would burn them all off, mind you, but that's, I guess, symbolically what it represents.
When we were in we met an Indian guy in Tenerife while we were there, and he was explaining to us about Sai Baba Senior, yeah? Is that who it was? Sai Baba's guru. Is that his name?
I don't know if he's connected to Sai Baba, frankly.
I'm not sure that's what he said. Anyway, but he had followers in everything from Sikhs and Muslims and Jains and Hindus, the whole lot. They were all following him. And when he died, then a row broke out between all the different religions as to what was supposed to happen with him.
His body.
Yeah. One group were saying that he had to be buried, another that he had to be cremated, another one that he was meant to be left out for vultures. So.
Yeah, the Jains, they prefer to do it that way.
They have special monks, don't they? The Hakdo.
The Buddhists have special monks, yeah.
That's Tibetan as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. In Tibet, you see, Tibet, there's no place to bury him. It's rock.
Yeah.
You know. So they have to just chop them up and leave them to the vultures. But the Jains also believe that because you're feeding the animals. You're feeding the birds.
Whether it was the next day or whatever it was, when they were meant to be doing whatever they were meant to do to him, when they opened up his casket, it was all just flowers.
Oh my God.
Body was gone.
It's not all funny.
Is this Sai Baba, the original Sai Baba?
The original one,
the
yeah.
Old dude,
yeah.
Not the incarnation that people don't even know he's incarnate, the incarnation.
Yeah.
The old guy.
They couldn't fight over him, they're just flowers. They
yeah.
sprinkled flour.
Gave the flour there instead. But that was nice.
Mm. Yeah, they each got a handful of flowers to do with what they wanted.
That's so good way of solving that problem.
Solved the problem. It is kala that detaches the soul from the body. Kala is time. Just as the wind scatters clouds here and there, kala, the destroyer, disperses people from one end of the world to the other. The sun, moon, Shiva, water, air, Indra, Indra is the king of the gods. Fire, sky, earth, herbs, the Vasus, they're a type of a group of gods, rivers, seas, and everything else is created and destroyed by kala, by time. O Garuda, he's speaking to Garuda, when the hour of death approaches, then, as if by chance, some disease becomes manifest. The internal organs grow weak and the dying person begins to feel the pangs of death. The dying person begins to lose consciousness and foam comes to his mouth. Finally, while all the relatives are lamenting, the Yamadutas come and take the soul, which is the size of a thumb, out of the body. This Garuda Purana, they're saying the size of a thumb. In the Upanishads, it says the soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. That's the size of the soul, making it somewhat microscopic. There are what they call the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas. Did you ever see that movie years ago called Ghost? And the bad guys in that movie, when they died or were killed, these very creatures came and took them away. Those are the Yamadutas. Those are exactly the way they're described in the Vedas. Duta means messenger, and Yama is the god of death. So the messenger is from Yama. His name's Yama. Yamaduta. And he's the guy that you have to go and talk to and go over your stuff with. Only people who are destined for, shall we say, a dark place or a darker experience. In other words, people who would have been a source of suffering and affliction for others will then get, you know, what goes around comes around. They will get suffering and affliction in exchange upon dying. So these dark characters, the Yamadutas, will come and get them. The Vishnu Dutas are the opposite. They are dispatched by Vishnu, by God, and they are beautiful, beautiful beings. Correct. Exactly. And that is not, the Vishnu Dutas do not come when your soul is destined to go to a higher planet, a heavenly planet in the material world to enjoy good karma based on good works done by you. The Vishnu Dutas do not come. Your soul is somehow elevated. You know, I don't know exactly how it happens. You go to the higher place to enjoy the fruits of your good deeds. The Vishnu Dutas come when you're done here. When there's no need for you to take another birth in the material world. And your soul is being liberated. That's when the Vishnu Dutas come. Angels, and take you beyond all the material realms. Depending who you are and how great a soul you are, you know, they might come in a big swan airplane. It talks about. She keeps saying she wants the swan airplane. So the more she meditates on it, the better chance she has of organizing it. He who never spoke falsely and had firm faith in the existence of God dies peacefully. He who never strays from Dharma due to lust, anger, or envy and acts according to what he preaches and does what he says isn't hypocritical. He dies peacefully. Those who bear false witness, who lie and are deceitful, die in an unconscious state. The ferocious, foul-smelling Yamadutas with clubs and sticks in their hands. I've read other accounts where they have ropes. So some people might listen to this and go, yeah, all right. Whether you want to take this literally or not, you know, hopefully none of us will meet these people. They forcibly take wicked persons away. Being terrified, they tremble while calling out for their mother, father, or children. While suffering terribly, the wicked soul leaves the body. Now, these are some interesting ones here. When sinful people have exhausted the results of their impious activities in various types of hells or hellish experiences. Hell is a state of mind. They are again born on earth. The killer of a Brahmin, one who's killed a Brahmin means saintly soul. Right? The killer of a Brahmin becomes a deer, horse, pig, or camel. A gold thief becomes a worm, a germ, or a fly. The killer of a Brahmin may suffer from tuberculosis. A drunkard, one who was a drunkard in one life, will have brown teeth in another life. So that's the way it goes. One who steals gold has bad nails. One who has sexual relations with the wife of his teacher suffers from a skin disease in his next life.
What happens to the wife of the...
I'm only reading what's in the book here.
She wrote the book.
After having sexual intercourse with the wives of others, or after killing a Brahmin, some people will become a Brahma Rakshasa in a lonely place. That's a ghost. One who steals jewels is born in a low family. One who steals corn becomes a rat and keeps stealing corn. Right? One who steals a vehicle becomes a camel. Becomes a vehicle. In the desert, no less. And one who steals fruit becomes a monkey and keeps stealing fruit. One who steals utensils becomes a vulture. As does one who steals a cow. One who steals women's clothing becomes a leper. Better take that back.
Bring all those spells back.
One who kills his teacher becomes an epileptic. And one who performs cruel deeds becomes a dwarf. Interesting. One who discards his wife becomes an animal that will be killed by a hunter. That's a serious one. One who steals the property of a saintly person or a deity becomes jaundiced. It's like hepatitis, suffers from jaundice. One who does not return borrowed money becomes a person with one good eye. A man who lives off the earnings of his wife becomes lame. One who disregards his wife and children has bad luck in his next life. One who has sexual relations with the wife of a saintly person becomes a jackal. One who steals clothing becomes a moth. And eats clothes. An envious person is born blind. Envy means you look at what somebody else has and you want it. You covet it. Why do they have it and I don't have it? And then the next life, there's no chance of envy except envying everybody who can see. But you can't envy anybody because you... or any of their things, because you can't see. It's interesting, yeah? One who steals a lamp becomes a beggar. I don't know about that one. One who kills his friend becomes an owl.
An owl?
Nighttime prowler. One who habitually lies speaks with an impediment in the next life. It's interesting. One who disturbs the marriage of another of others becomes a mosquito. One who spoils a young girl becomes a eunuch. Anyway, it goes on and on and on and on. Those are a few of them. I've said many times that our lives are preparation for death. But that doesn't mean we go around in a morbid frame of mind. Oh, we're going to die at any minute. But we don't behave like that. We live in the now. We don't live in the then or the later. We live now. There's no danger in chanting, and it doesn't make you project you into the future like you're not living in the now. You are. One of the things you're doing with the mantra is you're cleaning house. Isn't that the now? It's important to clean house. You're cleaning house emotionally, psychologically, and karmically.
So can emotions then start arising? More?
Oh yeah. Oh, they will.
All right, because I'm getting like really angry and stuff.
Yeah. Well, what's happening is, by chanting, you cleanse the mirror of the mind. So what you're doing is, you're it's almost like going into an old house with one of those scrapers, paint scrapers. And you say, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take this old paint off the wall. And then you start scraping. And sometimes, how many layers, different colors? You see? So one layer comes off. Then another layer comes off. And they're all different experiences and stuff that's been repressed and held down and denied or, crystallized. That's what's happening. That's what it's supposed to do, is bring that stuff up to the surface, let it bubble up to the surface so you can clear it, release it.
Is it a bad idea though at the moment with all the planetary stuff going on?
It's never a bad idea in terms of planetary stuff with a mantra like that, because the mantra, the Maha mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra is a mantra that is transcendental. It's a very, very high mantra, so it's not dependent upon where the planets are. When you contact God, you are not dependent on planets. Planets have their uses. Astrology has its uses. And you can find sometimes they're better than others, and that's what you're saying, and I agree with you. But approaching God is always a good idea. There's never a bad time to do it. Well, I'll tell you what they do say. We were reading in a couple different places that powerful winds have real powerful force, as we know.
Winds.
And mantras are like winds, powerful winds, and they have a force. So it said in a couple of different places we read recently that when a powerful wind blows, do not chant mantras, because it'll disturb the powerful winds outside. That's what it said. So the sages and the yogis, whenever the winds blow very, very strongly, they stop chanting their mantras and wait till the winds. I wouldn't worry too much about.
It's improved my art anyway.
Oh, it'll improve more than your art. It's like anything else. You don't test it out. That's what you're doing. You know, there's no reason for her to put fear in your mind about this. It's a legitimate, recognized Vedic mantra. This mantra was around for thousands of years before the Hare Krishnas appeared as a particular organization. So, it's a legitimate, recognized Vedic mantra.
The Hare Krishnas are recognized true, yeah?
Yeah, it's legitimate, but, you know, it's like any religious group has their own approach to things. And I've had clients that were from every religious group imaginable, almost everyone, living in Los Angeles. And, you know, no matter what organization it is, you know, you get one person, fine. You get two people, you got a partnership. You get three people, you got politics. Guaranteed. Any group, religious or otherwise, three people, you got politics. And more people, more politics. So, spiritual groups consist of people who are trying to purify or better themselves. But they are not yet purified. They haven't not yet attained the goal to which they are striving. So that means that they are flawed people. And subsequently, they are not carrying out the precepts or the tenets of their faith as perfectly as they would like to be. Let's just say it like that. So therefore, you've got corruption, you've got manipulation, you've got power struggles. Welcome to the material world. You find these in corporations, you find these in religious organizations, you find them in little groups that meet regularly. Yeah. Well, there's not too much of that here, but I don't have a lot of steam tonight. The moon's gone into Scorpio. The moon's gone debilitated at 6 o'clock. Transiting my eighth house, and it's like, okay. So, Kalindi suggested we do this meditation, but not a guided meditation. And let's pick a mantra. I'll tell you what, let's let people pick the mantra they want to pick. Mm-hmm. Pick a mantra. And this is just to be silent meditation. And we'll turn on the music and we'll meditate. No guided meditation. For a change.